So it is just a group of clean and sober, not California sober, but people genuinely mood and mind altering, you know, drug and alcohol free fans. So what we're doing is curating a place that's safe for people. They're just choosing to go do the festival without the use.
Are you not going to drop the big news?
Oh my goodness. Yes, 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 yes. Welcome back to the What Podcast. I'm Barry. That's Russ. That's Brian. That's Patrick. You guys should recognize, if you're at all familiar with this show, friend of the show, Patrick, from Soberoo and so many other things. You've been on, what, three times now? Four times, at least?
I think this is I think it's the third visit.
This is number three, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You've upped your game with the whole podcast look. You're crushing it. It looks great. We have a lot to talk about. We have we missed a week last week, and the week before it was just you and me, Russ, and I thought that was a really good show, actually. I was very pleased with that episode. Brian, you've been out of town. You got to go see our friend Beth. How is she?
Yeah, she's good. I was damn near world traveling. Ended up in Canada for a few minutes. We can get into that later on.
Or I see the hat.
Yeah. Victoria, Canada, the capital of British Columbia. But yeah, great time. Good stuff.
Well, you were coming back from out west in Canada, and I was coming back from Florida. So that's why just travel last week is why we couldn't really make it work.
Out west is one thing, but the very tip of the continental U.S., like all the way up there, man, that takes a long time to get there and back. So, So anyway, but glad to be back.
I'm going to remind everybody that we are just 2 months or less away from Bonnaroo. So in keeping with that, I'm going to open.
Oh, nice. Got the coconut water.
Got the coconut water. Per the advice of our friend Brad Parker, getting ready. You guys should be getting ready. You need to start hydrating. You need to start walking. You need to start packing.
Getting those steps.
There you go.
Patrick, what are you doing to get ready?
Catching up on sleep.
That's important, too.
Yeah, there won't be much when that ball drops in Manchester. It just is go, go, go time. So,
One of the things that I want to ask you about is you do Soberoo, as we alluded to, at Bonnaroo, which is, and Brian can ask more specific questions and has you guys, this is such a great thing that you guys do for festivals, but it's not just Bonnaroo. You do it for a lot of festivals, right? And you go to a lot of festivals, which is part of why I love having you on this show, because you bring a perspective that has a lot of angles to it. What have you been to in the last year?
There's a great one over in West Tennessee. My friends put together called Mempho Fest. I love going over to Mempho Fest. They usually curate a really, really cool lineup, things that this audience would love. And it's in a really nice setting. They've really put together a nice venue, and it's always a good time. So I love that one. I spent a day in Manchester, like everybody, last year. What else? So, yeah, our 501c3 business does about 30 festivals a year. I don't go to all of them. We've got some cousin accounts, some cousin businesses, people that have taken or work with us that are now doing something similar at the, like a Healing Appalachia has something now. So it just kind of organically spins off or grows, and then other ones like shut down, you know, how that goes in the business. But, I'm on the road, trying to maintain sanity. And, but it's the chase for live music, you know, it is just part of the bloodstream over here. If I'm not feeding it, I feel like I'm missing something.
I want to ask about that specifically later. There's, like I said, there's so much to get rid of. I need to address the robe.
I was going to say, we're burying the lead, I think, here.
Are we not going to talk about it?
Get to that. I need to apologize to Caleb, our friend Caleb from Bonnaroo Yearbook.
Because you're copying him.
I know, and I need to apologize. But when I saw it on him, I had to have it. I bought it that day, and I do have the pants. Absolutely.
Well, worth okay. Well, between Caleb, you, and Beth, you might all be twinsies by the time June gets here from Manchester, because she is obsessed with those pajamas. And I have to have them. I was like, listen, you go ahead and spend $1.50 or whatever it is.
$1.35.
If that's what you need to do, I'm not going to stand in your way. But eventually, everybody's going to have these things. It's sharp, though. It's sharp. I got it.
And they're so soft. I was telling Russ before we got on the air, when I told Kelly and my wife, I came home and I said, I'm buying these Bonnaroo pajamas. And she's like, why are you wasting your money? And when I opened it, she just laughed and laughed and laughed. I said, there it is. She got it.
It's silly as hell.
Those are cool.
What say you, Patrick? Would you wear such a get up at night with your end of night cigar or whatever your routine at the end of each evening?
I think if it was a onesie, I would wear it.
That's even worse.
See, I'd do a onesie for sure.
The only complaint that I have is the pants don't have pockets, but everything else is perfect. It's so soft. And I'm hoping it's going to be really cold at 2
in the
morning.
Did you get the hat with it? Did you get the wizard hat?
No. I didn't have the wizard hat that Caleb had.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
You just need the Dayglow orange fanny pack. That's it.
All right. There
no
we
pockets.
Go. All right. So we got that out of the way. Where
were
we?
I want to jump real quick back to Bonnaroo prep, too, because I've been starting my own prep with the bus, getting it. I got it washed super clean. I'm doing a deep clean on the inside. I got to change the oil later today. I finally got the tire patch. It's had a slow leak for the past year. You know, it just loses air over weeks. And so finally got that patched. Finally doing all the car maintenance stuff that I've neglected. So this is a good time to get started. If you've got a big road trip coming up, make sure your car is in good shape. Start working on getting all that, getting ready to go, because June's going to be here.
Absolutely. And like Patrick said, start hydrating, start sleeping. Sounds, simple, but it's reality. Start walking. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited. I think when we talk about this a lot of times, I think I sound like doom and gloom, like it's such a bad thing. I'm so excited. I love Bonnaroo. I'm so excited about it. It is a lot of walking. It's a lot of heat and all that. But it's the best. I just don't know of anything else that I think about as much as I do Bonnaroo. I see you shaking your head. You agree?
I mean, I love when it's, the getting off of, exit 114 or 117, whichever direction, it's coming. The countdown of the miles and the exits and the mile markers as you're coming down to the Manchester exits. And then, in the line, or whatever the process is to get to the place that you're going to have your car for the next 5 or 6 days, whatever the time frame is, and then building the community and starting. And it always, you can't avoid it. I have to. My team gets there middle of the day, and it's June in Tennessee, and it's probably going to be like 94 degrees, and it's blasting sun, and you're sweating, and you're dripping, and you're already worn out, but then all of a sudden the shade tents are up and the tents are built, and you sit in a chair and you're just sitting back, and then everything calms down, and then start walking around, and there's that path that you take to go to the arch. There's that road. There's the tree that's always over by the tent that you just visit the old blades of grass that you've seen for so many years, and it's
home.
It's just a joy.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, Patrick is up in Louisville, so he's coming. We're coming south up. He's coming north down. Simplest question that we should ask everybody who's going to be on leading up to the festival: the lineup dropped early, very early, annoyingly early. So you've had a lot of time to think about it. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on this year's lineup, Patrick?
I looked at it yesterday just because I was going to be on this call. There's so many posters that go just like they cross. It's like another festival's asking for paperwork and insurance from me, and I'm like too busy to even look at the lineups on a lot of these. And it was funny when that lineup dropped. It was like out of the blue. Usually there's like a teaser, it's coming on. Something online the day before, and I'm like, that's not going to be the lineup. I mean, that's another one of those like faux lineups that somebody's blasted out there just to get us. And then the next day it came out because somehow it did, you know, leak. And I was just like, well, let's take a look, you know. And, you know, it is what it is. But for me, it's Bonnaroo. It's
you're something. Saying that you're trying not to get right to the thing we're all saying. It's not that good. We understand that. But but there's always, I mean, you're just like us. It doesn't really matter. But I mean, is there anything on there that you are excited about that you haven't learned yet, or that you might not educate, or that you're about to educate yourself for? Because for me, it was very low as far as the, oh, this, and this. We all know that'll change as June gets closer, but your thoughts there?
Probably 75% of it is something I'm going to learn about on the festival grounds, maybe more than 75%. I mean, there are bands, it's just like the, if I'm curating a festival, you know, I go to like, you know, Hall of Famers, classic rock and roll, you know, stuff that I'm like, you know, like 10 towards, but, this promotion group, they do it completely differently now. And, I've adjusted my expectations. So, headliners are headliners. They are what they are, but they're even more and more electronic nowadays. So I'm okay with that, you know. There's going to be a crowd. We know there's going to be a crowd, whether, you know, the crowd's, you know, our age and looks like us or not. I'm past that. You know, I accept I'm, you know, my age and don't have any hair and have gray beard, but I'm ready to go see what is new in this universe that, the music business is allowing us to enjoy. And, on the lineup, there's like, you know, looking at bands, the one thing I left was like Blues Traveler's playing, but they're way down the list, you know, of bands. But then on that same day,
you fit in with this show so well.
Yeah, you do.
I can't wait for Blues Traveler either.
I just wrote down age. That's such a great point, because it's, look, I'm the old man. And Brian and Russ have made fun of me for years.
And we'll continue to make fun of me,
which is fair and should. But it's so interesting to think about this. I mean, all of us have been doing Bonnaroo since the beginning, essentially. But Russ started in 2018. But Brian since the beginning, me since the beginning, essentially. So we have this history. And sometimes it's hard for us to remember that the 18-year-old, it's their first, you know? And so we talk about it differently, maybe, but not really. I mean, I think we love it, I hope, for the same reasons, because we know it's going to be this thing. But it's also hard to explain to the 18-year-old what you just said. There's that blade of grass that I recognized from 20 years ago, right? And they don't want to hear that. They don't care. So that's where the whole what's the lineup. Yeah, that's where the lineup thing becomes an interesting question.
I'm guessing something like Tedeschi Trucks speaks to you, Patrick?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
Modest Mouse, a few of those kinds of things.
John, for sure.
Yeah.
Weird Al.
Japanese Breakfast. Yeah. I love Japanese Breakfast. Trombone Shorty will be fun. You get that vibe. You know. And then like that Blood Orange and Wet Leg on that just that Friday deal. Those are great live shows. I haven't seen a whole lot of either. Probably less than a handful of Wet Leg or Blood Orange shows. But, you know, it's going to be fun because they've got new music constantly coming out. They're churning new music. This isn't classic rock. We're on there for the classics, you know. They will play their classics. They have classics already, but I'm ready to hear some of the new stuff they're making because these are bands that are making new music. So that's what's fun. They're in the game of longevity. They want to be on these posters year after year, and they need to create stuff. So they need to impress us. I mean, they don't need to impress us, but their goal, I'm sure, is to bring the heat. So I'm ready to see what they do.
How much, or talk about your routine. You sort of alluded to that. What is your Bonnaroo routine? And I'll ask Russ and Brian the same, because I think we've all done it enough. It's kind of, I don't want to say routine, but we have our rhythm, right?
Yeah.
What's the weekend typically f- Forget the rain out for you.
Yeah. On arrival, it's just, you know, let's get like camp set up. Right. My team that comes in of volunteers is a dozen of us. We manage about 100 person campground and the campground and the community campground. So we've got to get our kitchen set up. We've got to get our shades and tents. We've got to get ready, and then our easy chairs and then the coolers and the drinks, and start to kind of cool off, relax, and then be ready as the crowd starts coming in with their hang tags that let them camp at Camp Soberoo. And then we can get them in and park the way they've asked us to line the cars up. You know, we got to respect the boundaries and stay in. So that's the first day for us. It's a heavy day of logistics on Wednesday, you know, getting people in as they have opened the gates. I guess it might be pivoting this year to Thursday. We'll have to have a conversation about when these people are going to start arriving. And then once, you know, we've got the majority of the folks in, I mean, this is going on for us overnight because some people are stuck in line. They're not leaving till after work. They don't get to the festival until midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. And Grace, who does, she's like, you know, 1A with me, you know, without her, I couldn't do this. She lives in Cookeville. She's been doing this with me for over 10 years. She manages the campground. It's like, she's up for like the next 15 hours to make sure that as a host or hostess, to make sure that the people that have bought Camp Soberoo Camping find us and get in with us. And she doesn't go to sleep that night. Bless her heart. She is amazing. And then we get to Thursday, and it's kind of just like, you can't do much because the sun comes up and you have to get out of your tent. And it's make coffee, get the French press and the water boiling. And then really, because we've done this so long, we've got a kitchen. Press. So it's
nice work.
You're going to do
bacon
it.
Bacon and eggs.
Right. That's nice work.
I got people that come that are all in the service industry, it seems, at some level. They've done this so many times. They have already prepped food for us that's not even having to be frozen, thawed, and cooked. It's just in a Ziploc ready to dump scrambled eggs on a skillet, and we're cooking bacon. Really, you know, why not? You know, I'm no spring chicken. I'm ready to, I don't want to like just to feed myself Fruit Loops. I dry Fruit Loops for breakfast and exactly. Go. We're going to take care of ourselves. We're sober people. And you know, we have a common sense about us nowadays that makes it, let's put it together and have fun and make it like the comforts of home while we're at our home away from home.
We got to replace all that alcohol consumption with salt and sugar and calories and fat, man. That's how that works. Hey, Patrick, it just popped into my head. I don't know. I'm sure we've talked about it in the past, but how big does your campsite go? For those that don't know, I mean, if you go to Bonnaroo's website and you buy ticket options and you buy camping options, one of those options is the Camp Soberoo parking camping option. And this isn't just grassroots anymore. This is integrated into the festival. How big is your camp plot these days? Not by footage, but like by how many people will you get in there?
And along those lines, sorry, let me interrupt, because speaking of Barry in the lead, let's talk about what it is you do. We all know, but what is Soberoo, and let's talk about the mission. And if you can blend that into your answer to Brian, please. And sorry, I probably should have asked that earlier.
No, no, I appreciate it. So it is just a group of clean and sober, not California sober, but people genuinely mood and mind altering, you know, drug and alcohol free. Fans of live music. We'll have conversations with people. I'm thinking about coming, but you know, my friend who's coming with me smokes weed. I'm like, you're fine here. They're fine here. As long as when they're with us, they can smoke the weed at the festival. We don't care about that, but just don't come in and have a big cloud fest, you know, in our area. So what we're doing is curating a place that's safe for people. They're just choosing to go do the festival without the use of drugs and alcohol. The majority of people are in a recovery program. That's fine. There are other visitors that do just plain old fashioned abstinence, and that's fine too. We don't care. We're just there to have fun with everybody else. It's not getting, you know, swirly. You know, they're just having their experience with music. They bought the ticket to go to the festival. The festival gives you enough experience without the use of drugs and alcohol. But hey, you know, when I was young, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So when that wore off, it became pretty apparent that I, you know, was going to have to stop using or I might die I thought everything was over for me. And then, you know, all my favorite bands are still out there playing, and I go see live music, and I found other people like me. So we're finding each other through the internet, Facebook groups, and we host a table inside the festival where there's pretty much 16 hours a day of activity of people can come in, take a load off, get out of the sun, get out of the rain, just sit down for a little bit and enjoy some fellowship of clear-minded, sober individuals, go back out to their music. And then we have four festival meetings a day at noon, 4 p.m., 8 p.m., and midnight in a segregated tent the festival created for us. They moved it last year. We never really got to have much of a meeting there last year, but it's new. I'm sure it'll be in the same place. It's over by the arch now, behind the lockers, behind the wall. So we have got a kind of a private area for the anonymity factor inside the festival. So that's activity that people can enjoy if they want or decide they would like to hang out with us. And then in the campground, to Brian's question, there'll be 40, 50 automobiles. People that got ride shares walk in with their backpack to the festival. However they get to us, we'll have about 100 or more individuals camping in Camp Soberoo. A lot doing their own breakfasts and hanging out with their crowd, and others mingling with us in the kind of the community kitchen. And at the campground, we have another tent space where we host a 8 a.m. yoga meditation, get up and go type of meeting. So it's activity for us 24 hours a day. It's almost nonstop. A lot of the people that camp and come and volunteer with us are there for the lineup. You know, they love it. They volunteer. They see the lineup release and they ask, and we try to give them a shot or let the first, you know, write the first refusal for last year's volunteers, and that they can't make it back, someone else. And they're going. They're going to sunrise sets. And then they're crawling back when we're doing our yoga and meditation at 8 a.m. And they're going to take a nap, and then they're going to get up when they get up and they go and do their thing. But everybody's got a shift and a set of responsibilities to serve. And our mission is, if nothing, but to serve the crowd. And I think most the people at Bonnaroo really appreciate that.
So to clarify, in case somebody's wondering, where you said the meetings were moved to the arch, those meetings you're talking about are the traditional, or at least as close as you could imagine to traditional, like AA style meet, 12-step style meetings, correct?
It would seem that way. If you walked in and you've ever been in one, you would feel very comfortable.
Yeah, something that would resemble that. It might not be exactly that. So if someone's used to that in their life, many people rely on these things for their mental health, for their sanity, for their sobriety. And sometimes people just like them. Like I know people who don't need them, just like them. They enjoy the camaraderie, the social aspect of it. A lot of people who are involved with this lifestyle can't go back to their old lifestyle. It's not that they don't, as far as their friends and their even family members. Like sometimes you have to move on from people that you grew up with. And that's what those kinds of meetings, it's not been something I've needed, but I've understood how. So that's why the anonymous. but that's why that's like that for that purpose. But the rest of the stuff you're talking about back over the campground, a little bit more of a like yoga or whatever. Hey, walking down the gravel, right? Hey, I want to do some yoga, jump on in, right? I mean, it's pretty welcoming to all kinds.
Yeah, yeah. And we're on that path where I don't know if they're doing the Rue Run anymore, but that Rue Run used to just run right by our tent. So we would get up and we would just like, everybody would just line that to it, cheering people on like you were at a marathon. And then, you know, it's great because everybody's got a costume on and they're doing the Rue Run.
Oh, I can't wait. That was my first. I was going to Rue Run last year, Patrick. And, you know, all our hopes and dreams were shattered.
I can't wait to see what Brian's costume is because he wears one every day, in my opinion. But,
I know exactly what he's going to wear.
You're looking at it.
Yeah, knee socks with two stripes. And
I'll ditch the hoodie.
One of the things, Patrick, that impressed me in our previous conversations, and by impressed, I don't mean like I'm awed. I mean, it stuck with me. Is that it's not, you guys are not just there for someone who has decided to quit drinking and is in a program, maybe, though you are there for that. It's maybe that person who finds themselves in a camp where all of a sudden their buddies that they showed up with are just blowing it out, and they need space. They need to get away. They need 10 minutes. They need 30 minutes. They need an hour. They're overwhelmed.
Even just any kind of respite. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great word. That's one of the things that stuck with me is, and I'm putting myself in that 18, 19, 21, you know, whatever year old me, I would have been the one blowing it out, but I can imagine that person who's like, this is not what I signed up for. I need a minute. Talk to that a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I think it's sort of a common, scenario that you drafted there, because it does happen. I mentioned it previously. I think with the Superfly guys and I came up with Soberoo to be the name of the header on the tent. So it's just branded part of the festival branding that, I think some people don't understand anything about sobriety, recovery, or any of that stuff. People would come up and think that, hey, my friend has really had too much. You know, can you guys, keep an eye on him or her and just let him sleep it off in the back of the tent? And early on, we'd be like, yeah, send him back there. And then as we got more, organized, the people on the board were like, no, you take him over to the medical tent, let them keep an eye on it. You don't want them to not. You don't know what they took, and you don't want them to not wake up in Soberoo, right? So walk them over to medical tent, and then you can do that. See, people have a common misconception, I think, that sometimes we're like a detox unit for the people that are overstimulated at a festival, have had too much to drink, and they vomited, and they can't rehydrate. Will you all rehydrate them? We have medical on site for that stuff, and that really is their job. We're not going to push them away and say no. We're going to walk them, if they don't know where it is, over to medical tent. We introduce ourselves at every festival almost immediately on day one to the people at medical tent, tell them what we do over here. And there's an occasional visitor that's going to do this, and we're going to walk them over to you. Then when they've rebounded, please walk them back over to us, and we can have a conversation with them. So, and then the person that may have brought their friend over comes back and hangs out with us. It's like, I'm exasperated. I can't catch my breath. This is exhausting. I've been, I'm going to say babysitting, but I've been caring for my friend, for almost 2 days now. Mm-hmm. They're going too hard, and it's their first Bonnaroo, or their older brothers have gone to Bonnaroo, and this is the first time they've been able to go, and they've got this vision of what Bonnaroo is supposed to be, an overabundance of stuff. And Bonnaroo is an overabundance of stuff, but it doesn't mean I have to overindulge. I know now I can go completely sober and have an overabundance of stuff, because it's 24 hours a day of live music, food, entertainment, comedy. You can find it. It's there. They've created this utopian village for us, and I don't need to go so hard that I can't enjoy any of it. And it's sort of a rookie mistake, but it happens.
Let me put words in both of your mouths, because I'll ask you, Patrick and Brian, you both, I think, have expressed on this show that you, you're both Dead fans, right? I'm correct, Patrick. Wasn't that your big, you followed the Dead? And again, I'm putting words, but weren't you both, correct that you both were worried that if I quit drinking, I won't enjoy this music as much as I used to?
Yeah, Patrick, take that one, because I'll piggyback off you.
Yeah, I saw my first Grateful Dead show in 1985. I was 19. You all with a calculator can figure out the age. And I was in love. Now, Cincinnati Riverbend, 1985. It was a classic Grateful Dead show. And I was just, after the show, I remember sitting on the hill with my friends, spun out, just really high and, wide awake. And we're just like, what do we do now? And my buddy looks over and he goes, drive to Alpine Valley. That's what we did. We just drove to Alpine Valley and we went to the next show. Yeah. And so I was on the bus and we just had the best time. And that was it. I mean, that until 95, a decade of seeing concerts. And then my love of live music was hatched, but my addiction was also hatched. And and not that there's gateways for anything, and my problem's my problem, but I just always said, yes, let's try something new. And I was a let's try something new kind of guy. If you had it, show me how to get it in me, and you tell me what it's supposed to do, and I'll tell you if it does that or not, and I'll figure out the dose, and I'll keep doing it if I liked it, and I won't if I don't. But there's not much I didn't like, so I spun hard in the 90s to a place of despair and hopelessness that, you know, I couldn't really get off the mat. You know, I could maybe get my mail order, you know, into GDTO for Grateful Dead tickets, but I was struggling to do the things I love to do because I was addicted to the thing that I guess I really fell in love with. And Jerry, you know, passed away. You know, we all know, and it's like, oh my God, I don't know about you all or Brian's experience, but I remember, I just told my boss, I can't be here today. And they're like, I get it. And I went out to the park and there was already hundreds of people, you know, in mourning. Just spent the day out there with just like silence. It was eerie that day. And it's kind of like 9/11, you know, that day. And I was already, you know, really just horribly addicted. And 97, you know, I got into recovery and I went to my first incarnation after the Grateful Dead that I saw. I think it might have been the first incarnation was TOO, The Other Ones. It was basically everybody else plus like Mark Caron or no, Steve Kimmock.
Bruce Hornsby
was the guitar. And they were, you know, going out and playing the big sheds, you know, in the Midwest and the big theaters and stadiums. And I was like, let's go. And I went to my first show. And I didn't really, I guess I knew about the Wharf Rats, but it wasn't on my radar to go to the Wharf Rat, table, and they were there. And I just noticed earlier this morning, I was, I go on Facebook like once a day to send out happy birthdays to anybody that I know. And then I get off Facebook. But the first thing that popped up on my Facebook wall was this woman, Teresa from Indianapolis, was at that show working that table, and she is celebrating 40 years in recovery today. Happens to be her birthday, so I'll wish her a birthday directly. We're still in touch. And another gentleman, Tim, was on that table with her. He just a week ago celebrated 36 years. They both were in Indianapolis people. I'm in Louisville. They're an hour north. We became like really good friends immediately. And, you know, thank God. I felt comfortable. I felt at home. Tim had long dreadlocks. Teresa wore all the, you know, colorful clothing, and they all had, you know, the vibe of a deadhead, but they were choosing to stay substance free. And when I went to shows in Chicago, I could come back and stay at Teresa and Daniel's farm, or I could call Tim and stay in his apartment. And those were just relationships that just blossomed and introduced new relationships. And, you know, that's kind of like where that was for me. It was just like, it's always been part of my life.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
All right, go ahead, Brian. I know you have an answer to this, and you've talked about it very well, wonderfully before.
Just a little bit, a couple of things there. First, the Wharf Rats were from the 80s, the version of Soberu to the Grateful Dead. Correct? I've got that right, Patrick. Yeah. Just so anybody didn't know that. Also, for any of our local people here in Chattanooga, when Patrick said Riverbend and Grateful Dead, that's a Riverbend Music Amphitheater in Cincinnati.
The Grateful Dead is also in Hamilton County.
It's also in Hamilton County. We're Hamilton County also. So, yeah, the Grateful Dead did not play Riverbend in Chattanooga.
No.
I guess I'll answer the question quick, and then I have a question for you, Patrick, as far as the music itself. And in 95, I was 15, and I was that was on the tail end or the middle fade out of grunge. So that's all I cared about at the time. That was a footnote of music history for me at that time. It was into the early 2000s that I started to really get into to all the new versions of the Grateful Dead, and all the way to the point, actually, this story kind of comes around in an odd way. My first sober show, completely sober show, was on the final Dead & Company tour in 2023. And that was those tickets were bought a year in advance. So I wasn't planning on being sober for that. And then I went with a bunch of people who were not sober. And I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do here. I might never listen to the Dead again after this week. And it was the complete opposite. There was something about it so new. You talk about, I was the same way as you, Patrick. I think we all are to a certain degree. I'm so excited by new. And I was like, man, I just watched a whole Dead show.
And remember it.
And I remember it all, and I can drive y'all home if I need to. Like, this is a pretty cool new place to be. But my question was, as I forget it, as I try to remember it, as I talk here, in relation to, well, how much did the Wharf Rats, how instrumental was that to you and your mission into Subaru, or was it at all? Maybe it was just subconscious and it turned into that. How much of that was a direct influence?
No, it is the direct influence. Okay. I mean, without it, there would be no. I mean, somebody may have. I wouldn't probably have come up with an idea to have sobriety stations at concerts or festivals. It was already invented, thank God, for the people that were doing it when I came around. And you know, there was a time in the late '90s. You know, I was seeing like bands like Fish and Widespread Panic. It was right out of college, and it was just on the road. Those are the bands. And a good friend of mine had started a group for the Fish. And they have a group called the Fellowship with a PH, and they do a table at every Fish show. And it is a massive following of fans because they're like one of the probably biggest touring bands in the country, in the world at the moment. I mean, they're always on the road. They play massive venues and they sell out, and they got a big sober following as well. Just goes with the numbers. So that was happening. And I was a bigger Panic fan. You know, being from the South or Mid-South. Anyway, it seemed a ton of those shows.
Same here.
And we were, you know, connecting through the internet back in the 90s, early internet, you know, early AOL email addresses, and just like starting to like have chats about connecting with other like-minded friends. And the Wharf Rats had a list that they had created of good volunteers in cities around the country. And the Fellowship kind of adopted that. They added a few more cities and a few more people. It's just handwritten paper. And they would, you know, somehow it would be passed around. We would get our hands on it as Widespread Panic fans. And we were trying to get, you know, some traction with that band about doing it. And they were a little hesitant at first. And then they relented at around 2001, 2000, something like 2000. They allowed us, you know, to do something there. So, you know, as about four or five guys originally, like it, we're starting to kind of like get this going. It was like a treasurer and a band liaison and a coordinator for the table people and secretary, just making the business sort of like happen. It took off. And ultimately I've been the band liaison now, you know, for most of its inception. And we have a table at every Widespread Panic show. And that was before Bonnaroo. So you got the sober group that's the Dead group, the sober group of the Fish group, and the sober group of the Panic group. And then Bonnaroo's lineup drops and it just drips with, you know, bands out of those, you know, lineages. And yeah, why not? You know, let's just go. I mean, the bands wouldn't put us on the festival bill because they don't have the power to do that. But that's how we got started.
So you answered it a little bit there. Talk about the timeline, because I mean, if somebody's just dropping in and listening, they're probably thinking this is just a 2 or 3 year old organization, or you know, whatever. But it's been around a long, long time, and I want to ask you if you can to sort of tell us the timeline, but also how things have changed over that time.
Yeah, you know, it was in the dirt under a tree, you know, by the coffee tent, you know, naturally. The first year, we just had to figure out on this 400-acre farm, how do we find each other? You know, it's easy to do at a concert, meet me at the merch table, but you go to a festival.
We're talking
Bonnaroo,
first year, right? Early.
2002.
2002, right? Yep. I'd already met lots of people and had phone numbers and email addresses, and we're trying to figure out logistics and where we park. How do we even park together? You don't know where you're going to park. They're going to put you where they're going to put you, and that's where you are for a week. And we get off and start walking around, and then suddenly, you know, word would leak, you know, coffee tent. Go to the coffee tent. And we just commandeered a table and chairs and started meeting there. We'd say, come back here at 5. You know, come back here at 9 tonight, you know, if you want to, like, come back together. And then pockets of us would just go, who's going to that tent? You know, who wants to go to the other tent? You know, who wants to go see somebody on which stage, right? We're going to go now. We're going to do this. We all, like, run together and come back together and hang together. And next year, same kind of lineup, you know, year 3, similar-ish kind of lineup. It's starting to evolve. You know, the Bonnaroo lineup is evolving. Can't keep having, you know, the Grateful Dead iterations, Widespread Panic and Phish every year. They got their own agenda. And you got to bring in new, you know, fans, and you got to bring in new music, and they start doing that. And I, just living close enough, just kept going. Stupid me. I just kept going. It isn't just like the very first thing you all asked, how do you get ready for it? You know, I just understood what I needed to bring now. You know, I needed to have certain things to survive 5 days at Bonnaroo and be ready for it. And regular people from Louisville were coming with me, and we would go every year and just sit in the dirt and tell people in advance. And we were doing it very organically in 1 year. The head of field operations pulled up on her golf cart. She's sitting across the dirt. It's now a paved road, but she's sitting across the dirt trail watching us. And that ended. And she waved, you know, it's like, hey, you know, come over here. I'm like, what's going on? You know, and she goes, what are y'all doing?
They're going to kick us out.
Something's going on here. Why is somebody paying attention to us? We're just trying to be off the radar. And then she gave me her card, said, just give me a call next week, you know, settle down, let us get this thing, you know, wrapped. And I reached out to her, asked me a couple questions, more questions, and said, would you get on a video call with some people from the festival? And they invited me on I don't even know if it was Zoom, whatever it was. They had a meeting at that time. It was 2007, after the 2007 Bonnaroo. And, probably in like August, this call takes place. And you know, you got, you know, Superfly, you know, Rick Foreman on the call from Superfly, right? And then you had the CEO for Music Cares, who was doing artists, you know, they help artists and management people in the industry with anything they have a difficulty, you know, handling. They don't always have insurance. They don't always have retirement savings. They don't always have health care. So, you know, their Music Cares is a big player in the industry. The CEO's on the call, head of security's on the call. And Chris, who was the girl that stopped me, and they start asking questions, and I'm wondering what is this about? Really didn't think they wanted us to be there doing that at the beginning of the call. As I became interested in the questions they were asking, I'm like, they seem to like what we're doing here. They're not having a problem. And then the question came up from Rick. He's like, how many people do you think, you know, are attending your meetings? And I said, you know, there could be 100 total people, but we probably have 15 people at our meetings, but there could be 100 people that we interact with over the week that we've gotten to know through the years. And his next response was, so you're helping me sell 100 tickets to my festival? And I'm like, you know, Rick, yeah, that's what I'm doing. That's my plan. But that wasn't what I came up with. I was like, yeah, you know, it seems like there's 100 people there. And he said, well, what can we do for you? And that's just that's Bonnaroo.
Yeah.
That the definition of Bonnaroo, right? Yeah. And that's what those original founders were all about.
Yeah. Thank I love that. God I love those that guys. Story.
At that time, Patrick, in 2002, was your sobriety flimsy? Was it vulnerable? Like, was it important that you had that at that time? I mean, it's important maybe to you still today, but that was a long time ago. Was it out of necessity, or you might spin out of control, or was it a combined, this is also a mission I'm getting involved in?
Yeah, I think it was more the latter. It was more like I didn't need it for me personally for my own safety and security. Of course, it doesn't hurt, but I was doing it more because of what it could provide for those.
So your sobriety at that point would have been 5-ish years based on our conversations, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. November 97 is when I took my last drink and,
That's a really interesting question, Brian, because do you have this need to help others in other areas, or is it just this?
It's become apparent to me that without service, I can be the most selfish SOB you have ever interacted with. And if I'm not,
I love this guy.
Yeah, you're talking about Brian Stone.
I know it's like you were Brian Stone. That's why we could hit it off, man. It's like my best friend.
My life has been a series of it's all about me or what's in it for me. And the moment I took the foot off of that gas pedal and hit the brakes and put the gas towards how can I help others and serve a greater cause, the things that I was seeking through my selfish channels all seem to materialize. And so
Brian ain't there yet, anything. But we'll see. He's young.
I'm gradually moving in that direction. I'm about to do the Bonnaroo run, for crying out loud. Come on, give me a break.
It's all right. That's a really interesting part of it, though. Back to how has it changed? How has what you've been doing changed? Grown, because I mean it's not just Bonnaroo, it's a lot of festivals, it's a lot of bands. You mentioned that bands now work through you, because that you've mentioned that before, because that's an interesting take too. A lot of the bands were skeptical, because they not only do fans are they weary of how can I enjoy this music if I'm not stoned, but the bands are also like, our fans may not like
it. They might not like it anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you how Bonnaroo's changed for us. It's like a lot of it's locations, where they have us. So we have to be able to communicate. And then our point of contact changes. Is like the iterations of the festival have changed and the ownerships have changed. So it's that's a constant. It's grown inside of the footprint from just a little small tent to a small tent with a big meeting tent to a small tent with a big meeting tent to a campground. So that has really evolved internally within, the organization of Bonnaroo. And then they're, they did Vegas in Vegas. So they invited us to come out to Vegas. We were like, hey, I get to go out to Vegas for a festival. It's kind of a concrete festival, right? It's just like in a parking lot with the the Silver Bowl or wherever the UNLV plays football.
Yeah, the football stadium, yeah.
Yeah, first time I ever saw Daft Punk, do their, basically their Coachella set, right, at Vegas, right? It was just like the crazy pyramid, those next festival invites us to do it because somebody from another festival was at Vegas or at Bonnaroo walking around stealing best practices, right? And we become a best practice for a lot of these as the festivals sort of like all get acquired by a larger organization or a new one pops up. Sometimes we're invited in or we're added because they do us at their other festivals and now they want us at the next one that they've acquired.
Let me ask you this, Patrick, on the same vein of things changing over the decades, alcohol consumption amongst young people is very, very down, and not even just young people, which is a great story, unless it's leading to other things, which in some cases it might be. But have you seen in your, I almost said clientele, amongst the people who reach out to you for your services and services like yours. I don't think addiction has anything to do with stats about consumption of a product, sold legally. It might, though. Have you seen any changes in the last 5+ years or so of just the random people that might seek your guidance and help or maybe just from your vantage point? Or just does addiction know no trends, right? There's the trend of sales might not have anything to do with the addiction issue in America.
And let me jump on that too, because I'm old. So when I hear addiction, I think alcohol or cocaine, whatever, heroin. It's very specific. I don't just think of being addicted to all kinds of
things. Opiates, right? or there's
a lot. There are a lot of different types of addictions, right? So I just want to put that out there as someone.
Yeah, I mean the people in Al-Anon will tell you that they have an addiction. It's addicted to trying to fix an alcoholic, right? So then you've got, you know, obviously there's Gamblers Anonymous meetings around the world for people that have a gambling. That's not an itch that I ever scratched. I mean, I'm too tight to like sit at a poker table for like 12 hours or 12 days.
Right.
But I'll definitely do it with cocaine. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that's so different, but that's my
it's a little more fun, I thought.
Yeah, I guess so. But I think, you know, like addiction versus sobriety, they're two different things, you know, because not like your Brian was talking about, people who just not even drinking anymore, you know, the numbers are reducing for various reasons. I'm sure there's a main reason, but there's also other reasons. And so does that mean they don't do other things? Maybe, but I think when they go to a festival, a lot of the younger, you know, late college, out of college, early out of college, early career minded individuals that can afford a Bonnaroo weekend, time off work, and the tickets and all the expenses and planning that goes into going to a festival are more into taking care of themselves. They're drinking the coconut water, right? They're doing the things because there's marketing around that now that supersedes maybe Jack Daniel's marketing. So they are into wellness, unlike my generation probably ever was. Mm-hmm. And they are familiar with terms like harm reduction. Never heard that until recently, which is fine. You know, if it was like, you know, the thing that was killing you is now no longer a thing, but you're still doing something else, and that's just reduction in harm, fine. You know, we're happy you're alive and that you are able to come to this event and have a good time. And we're there for them. They will come up because our header says Soberoo and ask us questions. They may not interact or participate with us outside of a 15-minute conversation at the table. What do we do? How, you know, they get the answers to the questions like you all are asking, and then they go their own way, but they know we're there. And then they say something to their friends, and then they say something to their friends. So people find out about us in various fashions. They don't have to necessarily have had the addiction problem that I had. They may have just chosen sobriety, because that's how they were brought up through their high school life, and drinking didn't appeal to them, or they drank a few times and they didn't like the effect or the taste.
But addiction trends, it feels like you're about to say they haven't changed all that much with the changing trends of alcohol consumption from a macro view, zoom out down. Your mission, the people who need to seek your help, it doesn't sound like there's much difference there at all because of the vast amounts of addiction that there are out there.
Yeah, I don't work in the field. You know, I don't have a degree in that. You know, I was telling somebody the other day, my graduate degree is OCD. You know, I don't have an MBA. You know, so yeah. I know what I know from word of mouth or hearsay with people that I know in the industry, the recovery industry itself. But yeah, I think you're right, Brian. I think the numbers are probably the same. If you've got addiction, you've got addiction. You just might not have like taken the genie out of the bottle yet. You know, if you're not drinking, but you have, you know, genetic alcoholism or soon to blossom alcoholism, you're just not feeding it, you can have a really good life.
Well, this is a totally odd. I'm not even trying to ask for anybody to respond to this, but this gambling thing, check back in 10, 15 years. Oh my God. The youth, I mean, I'm being serious. It is a dangerous thing.
Because it's sold as, it's like the doctor prescribing drugs to you. It's sold as legit.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Because again, I'm going to put words in your mouth. And Brian has talked about this before on his own podcast and on here with you. If I'm that guy who thinks I'm an alcoholic, I got a problem, I'd like to go to Soberoo, I need help. What is the experience? My initial reaction is I don't want to be preached to. I don't want to go sign my life away. I don't want you in my face saying you need to do this. You know what I mean? I don't want the strong arm.
Yeah.
That's not what you guys do. Yeah. Right. So explain the experience, I guess, is for lack of a better way to put it.
No, I think that's the perfect way to put it, is experience. You know, I only have my experience, right? My experience is my experience, which could be an invaluable tool to someone who's going through their experience. I explain my experience, they identify with it, and they want to know how I stopped or got better. And that is the essence of recovery, not the finger pointing. You know, I mean, men and women, boys and girls that have gotten in trouble with drugs and alcohol and have mom and dad putting the finger in their chest or in their face. You have to, you must, those, I mean, I heard that from, you know, girlfriends and bosses and parents for decades. You got to get it together. You got to quit. I don't hear that. But when the first time I was in a recovery meeting and I had somebody approach me and say, look, you know, when I was going through that, this is what I did. You know, I love storytellers. You know, I think a lot of people in recovery are just nothing but storytellers. We tell our story and then other people listen, and we're great question askers, you know, instead of just, you know, direction givers. And I think that's sort of like why it's effective.
Well, off of Bonnaroo topic a little bit, I wanted to get into quickly, as we're already ran. The minutes are calculating quickly here.
Oh, I knew it was going to be a long one.
but you're in Louisville. And so we were talking about, you know, everybody was recently, the Bourbon and Beyond lineup. Based on everything we know between the four of us, you're just like us. You love it too. I haven't asked you, but I bet you do. Talk about the logistics of that festival, you would, at the Expo Center, or whatever exactly it's called. It's a little bit on the outskirts of the city, and what you like about it, what you don't like about it, and what people can expect more from just logistically, because that's where I've heard the most problems about that festival. The problem ain't the booking.
The lineup is amazing.
The booking of that lineup at year in, year out might be the best in the country. You know, Coachella might have something to say about it. But other than that, talk about the logistics, because that's where I've heard a lot of the problems could be. And a lot of that's anecdotal and Reddit and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. The group that comes in and does that, Danny Wimmer Presents, they came to Louisville, I don't even know, like now 12, 15 years ago. And they put together this festival that we got word of through the newspaper that they're going to put on a thing called Louder Than Life. It was going to be their festival down on the river, not where Four Castle used to be, but like in an old country club vacant lot that people walked their dogs in on River Road. Pretty big intersection right off the highway. Had some good logistics for getting in and out of the city. Hotels were right there, but it was down by the river. And like Bonnaroo, when you get a big rain, the water rises really quickly on those grounds, and they had that problem maybe year three. I mean, it was bad. And I'm like, well, this is going to be it. They're either going to be a really good citizen or partner to the community, and they're going to fix that all that acreage that they used, or they're going to disappear. We'll never hear from them again. They were out there for weeks afterwards, laying straw, leveling the ground. They did a great job. They're a really good steward and apparently a really good partner. The city really adopted them. And then they moved them. They moved them over to an area over at the fairgrounds, way away from that original location. And they added a second festival, Bourbon and Beyond. So they got two festivals going week after week, back-to-back weeks. They just changed the colors and the headers on every tent and stage.
Such huge productions, too. Massive productions, back-to-back weeks. But sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's 5-6 stages. Bourbon and Beyond focused in the bourbon industry or culinary industry. A lot of different hospitality-focused conversations at certain tents. And then, you know, the music is amazing, but the first 5 years they were at this new location, it was an interesting decision.
The way they do it, though, it's not that aesthetically pleasing. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, there's no trees, you know?
Yeah.
No, there's no trees. You find your space and get it figured out. But they moved it last year for the first time since they went out to the fairgrounds, to a different side of the fairgrounds, which incorporated indoor-outdoor air conditioning, drive room if it's wet. You know, you can go inside. There's lots of seating. And they moved our space inside a building attached to the festival footprint. And they also incorporated the area that's Kentucky Kingdom, which is like Six Flags you know, right there inside the festival. You can go on roller coaster rides, Ferris wheel, already in place at this event now. So they added that last year. It'll be again this year. And it's much bigger footprint. But the way their stages are set up, it's the two big stages are right next to each other. And this band on this stage is wrapping up. And this band, I remember a couple of years ago, it's like I was seeing Duran over on this stage and I'm having the best time. And then this stage is all of a sudden the crowd moves over to this side and I'm over on that left side of the stage. And the Killers came out like with their big hit opener. And it's just like, I just grabbed my phone. I'm like, this is great. I'm walking right out to the front of the Killers stage. And then you shuffle back to the other side for the next act and the night wraps. But the other stage is outside because it's maybe Kentucky. It's a lot of like a jug band, bluegrass band, guitar driven bands that we would love, that we all love, you know, and they're out there. Then you can go out to see those in front of smaller audiences. And they do incorporate a little more grassy areas now. And they roll out a lot of like plush AstroTurf to keep, because it could be super hot, but they do it in September. In September and May in Louisville are spectacular months.
Yeah.
We do the Kentucky Derby here every year in May because it's a spectacular time of year as the seasons are blooming and then right before fall. So you usually never get terrible weather unless a hurricane comes out of the Gulf.
That's what I meant by you never know. You could get one of those. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, the spring and fall kind of thing. But I mean, as far as like, just heard a lot of things with water lines and getting logistically in and out. I've not heard a lot of good things. You just described a very nice picture. Do the locals embrace it? I mean, is there a lot of like, get this traffic mess out of my town? Or
our friend, the people that are going to drive a car into Trevin, it? Bernarding, Brian, heard our, you know, we talked about this a couple, 3 weeks ago, and he texted and said, I like it a lot.
Okay.
But I did ask him, do you buy VIP? And he said, yeah.
Well, so that's course, the one thing. Of course thing, he does.
I know he does, but that's the one thing I've heard is it's good if you do VIP. That's maybe where we heard some of the Reddit conversation is, you know, for the general GA, it's maybe not as nice, but again,
I'll second that. You know, you definitely want to get the VIP, which is where I'm going from Duran to the Killers or whatever, because I'm right in that area and it's not unaffordable. I don't think a lot of people drive into the madness because it is, it's a lot of people. They sell a ton of tickets, 75,000 people at Louder Than Life last year. That was a record. That was the biggest festival in the country last year. And Bourbon and Beyond's the week before, and they had like 65, 70 there.
A day you're talking about, right? Yeah. Wow.
Tickets sold. Yeah. And then within a mile on that. The reason they're there is at the expo center and there's hotels all over the place and they have camping. If you want to bring a camper and set up for that. Now, I don't know how any of that works. I'm not out there for that, but a mile takes me about 20 minutes to walk. And you within a mile, there's probably 15 hotels. If you're planning in advance and you get a hotel, you can walk back to your hotel. And I think most people, they figured out rideshare. They'll just get the rideshare in. The rideshares are already pre-programmed with Lyft and Uber where to take you for those events. There's maybe three entry points and they drop you off at the right place. You go in, you're there, and you rideshare out. Or you have your friends drop you off and pick you up. But most people are hoteling it if they're coming in from Chattanooga or they're doing the camping and trying to figure out if that's a good call or not. But then when you're inside, VIP is up front. It is up front. They don't like segregate. You can have GA on the right side and VIP on the left side, and you're sharing the front of the stage. It's VIP in the front of the stage. But they do have massive field screens. If you're way in the back, you can see the screens and obviously the big stage screens because they've got the biggest stages you would imagine.
So you're saying it all works out well and it's a big time.
You're pro.
I think they moved it last year, and they told me about it about 6 weeks before the festival, and then they made an announcement that they were relocating it at the fairgrounds to a new footprint, and then started putting out I didn't know what to expect, so I kind of drove out there because the fairgrounds it's a state-owned property. You can drive on it. I just wanted to see sort of like, I've never really been on this area, and I see how I can kind of I can see what they're thinking here, because the other area, it didn't make a whole lot of sense. They stayed there for a while, and then I think this is a nicer thing, incorporating the Six Flags over there called Kentucky Kingdom, incorporating that. People can go in there and do water slides and ride a Ferris wheel and see everything and hear everything. And I don't have a problem getting drinks. I haven't had a problem getting food. But you know, it is my hometown, and I see a ton of people I know, and everybody seems to have
You got all the secrets. We were joking about it a few weeks ago that we're all coming to stay at your house, because we talk about it. We talk about it every year that we're going to go, and we never do, and we can go hang out in front of your green screen.
You all are welcome. You all are welcome.
All right, along those lines, there's other events. Russ, I mentioned at the start of the show that it's been a busy couple of weeks. So in the last 2 or 3 weeks, Russ, you've gotten confirmation you're going to Shaky Knees.
Yeah.
Brian and I, y'all are
too, right?
Yeah. Brian, you and I need to talk about it. I know we kind of joked that we're going to go on Sunday, maybe drive down together at least for that one day. But also Cave Fest, we are going to go hopefully to that, and still trying to figure out if we're going to go see the Les Claypool thing at the Cavern.
Yeah,
so
that lineup for Cave Fest dropped pretty early, speaking of lineups dropping. Hey, speaking of that, Patrick, have you been to the Caverns on Mont Eagle? Have you been to that venue?
Yeah, I'm jealous.
It's as great as anything you've ever done, right? I mean, maybe not anything you've ever done, but I'm in love with the place. And the camping setup there, which is not for every show, but when they do it, it has got that Bonnaroo 2002 feel. It's primitive. You can have a little fire, like a little charcoal fire grill, and big time. So you have been there, and your thoughts.
Yeah, they do a great job. It's like you said. I mean, I think it has smaller, you know, maybe better in this day and age, you know, for us, you know, but, you know, smaller with a big vibe feel. And I think they've kind of put that together. But they've got a natural, beautiful venue at their disposal. So, you know, go screw that up, you know, good luck screwing that up.
Well, you got caves all over Kentucky too. So you're no stranger to a fun cave, but boy, this place.
We like it too because it's independently run. It's one of the very few, right? That
it's no Live Nation. Yeah.
Yeah. Big time, but independently run. Yeah.
You know, you go into Bonnaroo or any of these festivals, and some of those daytime little acts, and I love seeing them in smaller venues. You know, the Caverns is one of those, right? If you can see somebody like that in a just more intimate.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it can't always be that tent with like 400 people.
Right. Well, let's go back to the Caverns for a bit, because I think we're underselling it. This is Cave Fest. This is 2 days of a music festival. I think it's the best deal, period. And it's bluegrass. You know, if you're not into bluegrass, I get it. But $99. For a whole weekend of music, and it includes car camping. I mean, you can't beat the deal. There's a lot of bluegrass, but there's also, Phish's Billy Breeze is doing a Bob Weir tribute there. There's all kinds of stuff. There's a John Prine 80th birthday party happening. You know, there's all kinds of stuff going on. I think it's a great deal.
And everything, for those who've never been, everything is right there. It's walking. You're camping. You know, you walk to the Cavern, the outdoor amphitheater. It's two of the best music venues that I know. Two of the most unique, I'll put it that way, but also great. And it's all right there. So
yeah, you've got the cave, which is awesome because you're in a cave. And then they also have this.
You're watching a concert
beautiful
in a cave.
In a cave. But they also have this outdoor amphitheater that they built, you know, 4 or 5 years ago.
You're COVID.
And it's massive. Yeah, it's amazing. So, you know, two stages, two opportunities, and you're right there at the campground, too. And they got a bunch of food trucks.
For any sound engineer that's got to put together the audio in a cave. I mean, that's a tall order.
It is,
It's a hell of a challenge, and it works sometimes, and sometimes not as much. But there's a lot of grace given by seemingly everybody, and certainly me, when you're in the setting because how great it is. But that amphitheater out there is a whole different story. Like, it's mm-hmm. a traditional amphitheater setup that they're still adding more enhancements to the stage and to the area. It gets better every time I see it. So we're big fans there. I mean, it's almost like this is almost better than Bonnaroo, guys.
In some ways,
this kind of place is kind of better.
Some ways it is.
Yeah. And they're thoughtful enough. There was a friend who took we had a little yellow balloon, you know, sober area there last year. I would expect we would do another one.
Really? You have done that?
Please do. Yeah.
There was like a sister, somebody else that had volunteered for us before, knew some of the people there. I didn't have any contact, or I can't manage and approach anybody about these things. Usually I'm organically invited, but he took the initiative and got it going. And I think he'll be back again.
Let me ask about that real quick, Patrick. In the world of litigation and antitrust seeming to not even be a thing anymore, and licensing, do any of those things exist? They must have to exist a little bit because you are 501c3 and all that kind of thing. Do people, if they want to do their own thing, do they have to run anything by you from a legal department standpoint? I mean, you just kind of said no, but it seems odd because there's damn litigation about everything these days. I'm not saying you're going to go running after anybody yourself, but is there a process? How does that work?
No, I mean, like the Wharf Rats are not a 501c3, but when I started out, we weren't either, and I didn't run anything by them. You know, we just did it, and the guys and girls that are doing these things at like Healing Appalachia and you know at the Cave Fest, organically have just taken the reins and run with it, and bravo. You know, I do have conversations with them. I know them. They have volunteered with us previously to get the mission. They're just carrying the mission out in their own fashion. If they get to a point where they are being asked to do, I get asked by every festival to fill out a contract and to have insurance, a COI insuring, the festival, the promoter, and all the stuff they want me to put in that cover letter. The COI has got to have all the language. I've got an insurance company. I pay for insurance, annually. Our foundation pays, if they get to that place where they need those things, they'll have to roll it over to be involved with us. But right now it's rolling fine.
Last question for me on Sober All the Way Around. It just another one that popped into my head. The yellow balloons thing. Is that just a ubiquitous thing within the community of recovery? Was that a Wharf Rats thing that you picked up and went with, or is that the universal symbol?
It is a Wharf Rats thing. It is the universal symbol, and legend has it that, you know, there was a tour magazine, or maybe it was even like an early Relics. It used to have fan magazines, and some sober deadhead took out they put an ad, a free placement in the back, like a help wanted, one of these trade magazines, like, you know, Relics or something out there. Mm-hmm. It's like sober deadhead looking for other sober deadheads. And then somebody like, here's how you can contact me. And then somehow letters got exchanged, or I'm going to be at this show at the Spectrum in Philadelphia, you know, on Saturday night.
Look for the yellow balloon. Nice.
I'll be in section. My tickets are in 214. How will I find you in 214? I'm in the guy in the tie-dye, you know. How do I find you?
Yeah, at this right. Yeah. That narrows it down. I'm the gray-headed guy in tie-dye. Yeah, that helps.
So legend has it, I'll stand up at set break and I'll hold up a yellow balloon and come find me. And legend has it, that's it.
All right. There you go.
That's funny. I always joke when my kids go to a Vols game, I'm like, look for my son. He's there. He'll be wearing orange. Yeah. Good luck. All right. I only have one more thing. And Russ, you know where I'm going with this. I don't know if you have any other things to talk about, but
we got a lot to talk about.
Well, I don't know if we have enough time, but we got an email this week, and I don't even remember who sent it to us, to say, check out this group.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I don't know how to say it, but I'm going to try it. Angine de Petrini? Petrine? Am I even close?
I've never heard of it. Yeah, I don't even know. It's French. They're a Canadian band. It's as a duo. And if you've seen them, you know what I'm talking about because they have a Brian, have you watched the video?
I guess not. I have no idea what we're talking about.
Oh, really? Oh, my gosh. Even Rick Beato did a video on this because he called the video "Stop Emailing Me About This Band." They're just blowing up. They wear these costumes. It's like a black and white polka dotted thing. They've got giant masks on, these helmets with big noses. Really surprised you haven't seen this because they're just
the closest
blowing up
thing
everywhere.
I can think of, if you remember that viral video, what does the fox say? You remember that stupid, crazy, wacky
thing?
It's Russell. We'll link to it. It's the fact that Rick Beato is out there. It's nuts. It's
so
bizarre.
What are they doing then? What's the story?
It's Math Rock. They are a duo. It's it's a guy with a bass guitar and a regular guitar kind of stacked together. So he's got both sets of frets and strings, and then a drummer. And yeah, he'll play like a bass line and then he'll loop that and then he'll play guitar on top of that. And you know, it's Math Rock. It's all very odd time signatures, very fast, you know, riffs, lots of looping, you know, all kinds of stuff. Barry, to me, this is King Crimson. This is 80s King Crimson.
Russ loves it.
It's, yeah, that's why I'm all in. I mean, this is Discipline. This is Thelu and Genji. This is, you know, everything about this is so cool. And I mean, just the fact that they're dressed up in these odd costumes just makes it even better. They have they've not really like revealed their own who they are. They have made up names. They have kind of a backstory that they're aliens. They have their own made up language that they do interviews in this language and they have somebody translate. I mean, it's a whole
thing. And they're on the show next week or something.
Somebody sent us this video. Is, you know, we get these all the time. And people are watch this. And
well, it wasn't just that. I mean, I've seen them everywhere I go online. Yeah. They're in another video. Everyone's talking about them. People are calling for them to be maybe at the Bonnaroo 2027 lineup. They're booking shows all over the country. They're doing these tours. I mean, it's amazing to see how big this has gotten.
So it's called, you know, Andrea, it's basically Bocelli. Go ahead. Sorry.
Andrea Bocelli? What was the name again?
No,
do you know
not
the name?
Andrea, but it's A-N-G-I-N-E D-E-P-O-I-T-R-I-N-E.
Yeah. Did you get all that?
It's right. It's Daft Punk if they did like really bad acid. Type of
there you go. Yeah. It's definitely a performance costume thing.
Yeah. But the music is really good. Made me I'm watching it. I'm thinking, what do I know? Why, what am I remind me of? And I finally it landed on P-Funk. I don't know if you guys remember. They had Diaper Man and all these characters, and one of them was Sir Nose Devoid of Funk with the giant nose. That's kind of what this reminds me of. Kind of like Alice in Wonderland, but with a big, obscene, you know, phallic nose type of thing. It's just crazy.
And, you know, anybody can get up on stage dressed like that, but these guys can actually back it up with real talent. I mean, the fact that they're playing with these huge helmets on, this guy's like drumming. He can't even see what he's hitting. You know, he's playing guitar. He can't even look down, you know, because they're just, it's ridiculous. But it is really good. I mean, just the music alone without the performance side of it is really, really good. I'm really enjoying listening
to it. Russ likes it more than I do, but it's very entertaining.
I'm all in.
All right. That's all I got. What else you got, Russ?
Well, are you not going to drop the big news?
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
I was hoping we would lead with this, but we're going to be back at Bonnaroo doing a live show.
I did forget about that. I was so I was so proud of my robe. Yes,
we
will be back.
Pajamas.
The What Podcast will be back inside, what is that tent?
Planet Roo.
Planet Roo.
Planet Roo. We're going to be on the house stage.
Yeah, we're going to be back. That was a blast last year. Details to be announced.
Yeah, like I need another thing to be stressed out about that week, Patrick. You want to take my spot? You can have it. I'm kidding.
I'll definitely come by, and I'll definitely look for you guys and try and say hi and listen to your old.
It is on Thursday and a good time. We don't know what time yet, but it's gonna it's gonna work out well for us.
I don't know how many details we can share just yet, but we can announce that we will be there on Thursday, pretty early in the day. Not a lot else going on. You'll get a chance to come see us, come see the live show.
Star of the day, man. Stars of the day.
I'm not going to lie. The fact that we got to do something on stage at Bonnaroo is one of the greatest moments of my life. So I'm overjoyed that we get to do it again, that they ask. So,
yeah, we'll announce more soon, especially once we get details nailed down, like guests and topics and all that. So, yeah, stay tuned.
Yeah, you might have to move that segment to the front. I forgot. There's so much. Like I said, it's a big show.
Well, it's just a lot to get into.
Yeah. All right. What else? Anything else?
Do we want to mention our upcoming Record Store Day stuff, too?
Oh, like I said, there's a lot. Yes, we will be doing a segment very soon at one of the local record vinyl shops, Yellow Racket Records. We're going to do a live thing with Ben over there. And we'll announce more details soon. If you guys want to come join us, I think we're going to do it. I know we're going to do it from there, whether it'll be during hours or not. I'm not 100% sure, but if it is, you guys can come.
Knowing him, absolutely, I'm sure it will be, because he will be into that idea. They got the stage there. They got it nice set up. So that'll be fun, as Record Store Day is fast approaching. My God, it's April already, isn't it? Yeah, it's April today.
It's April.
On the day of this. Is it April Fool's Day on our drop day? I think it is.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yep. Maybe we've had a lot of bad jokes in here and we're lying about a bunch of stuff.
Brian loves him an April Fool joke.
Nothing brings out the creativity and imagination in America than April Fool's Day.
Yeah, it's right up there with March 17th.
Yeah. Lots of random stuff.
All right, Patrick, man, anything else you wanted to add that we didn't ask you about? Thank you so much. You are always one of our favorite guests because you know exactly what you're talking about. You do a great job and you're a lot of fun to talk to.
Yeah, drop some knowledge on us on the way out here. Tighten this thing up.
Well,
I appreciate it, guys. It's always a pleasure. You know, we'll be at a bunch of festivals this year. Yellow Balloons are the indicator. You come find us. It'll say sober something at the top, more than likely. And you know, it's a pleasure to hang out with you guys and know what you're talking about Bonnaroo, because it's, you know, I love it as much as you do, I hope. And encouraged to come see you guys on the stage again when you all do your thing.
All right. Great show, guys. Like I said, lots to do. We have so many things planned. Next week is Easter. Not 100% sure what that's going to look like, but we have a lot of guests lined up and a lot of things yet to talk about. Russ, Brian, good show. Glad you're all back.
Good show. Yeah. And keep emailing us weird stuff you come across. We'll watch it.
Yeah, send
Brian
us,
won't, but we will.
No, I'll yeah, get send to it. Stuff. I'll get to it. Now I got to see all this stuff. Oh, yeah. I got
to
know.
Can't wait to hear your both of your opinions on it. We'll put the link.
Patrick, right, guys, man, thanks so much for doing this with us every year and hanging out with us at the festival and everything else, man. We really appreciate your service and your dedication to the craft. It's really impressive.
Well, you're welcome here if you come up for bourbon and beyond. So you can
All right. We don't take up a lot of space.
I just need a driveway.
Yeah, that's true. All he needs is a driveway. I need some sparkling water. I need some lime juice. I need some cold brew.
Hot shower and a cup of coffee.
Some cold foam. If you could get some heavy cream and some milk. Yeah, 1% on that, please.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event.
save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.